Gather round, Alberta growers, for common sense, educational, get your hands dirty, not as hard as you think to make it beautiful tips, with Rob and Kevin from Salisbury Greenhouse and Landscaping. Pour a coffee, grab the seeds, and get ready to grow.
Good morning, eager gardeners. Welcome to the show. I'm Rob Sproul from Salisbury Greenhouse.
And I'm Kevin Napora from Salisbury Landscaping.
And we're ready to get our hands dirty. And we're talking about gardening in April and what to do in your garden in April. The sun's shining. It is a freakishly warm spring so far, Kevin.
No, it's gone really cool. It was great in March. Now it's getting, well, it's still March.
It depends on when you listen to the podcast.
Yes.
So seeding. So a lot of people, you know, this is a time, well, it's past the time for some types of seeds, and it's coming up for other types of seeds, to start your seeds indoors. And seeding right now, this year in the greenhouse, has been incredibly popular with, you know, with grocery prices being what they are, the $8 cauliflower in January, and everybody wanting to start growing their own veggies.
No, I totally think that there's going to be a giant upswing in people planting vegetables. And also planting vegetables like in pots. So like you can have all kinds of different pots around your patios. And so you can totally grow all of those things.
Who knew a low dollar would be great news for getting people gardening and getting people out in the garden.
Yeah,
and,
no, totally.
You know, healthy and eating better and all that good stuff. So we can still seed indoors. We can still start our seeds. But, you know, for things like tomatoes and pepper, we might want to get a move on.
Yes. Yeah, I bought my seeds, what was it, a month and a half ago, and I still haven't gotten to my tomatoes.
Yeah, you should get on that.
No, I'm totally doing that.
Well, you're busy designing yards, so it's a little hard.
It is hard.
Other things to seed indoors. Of course, you can do salad greens any month of the year.
Oh, for sure. And one of the neat things that the Salisbury Greenhouse has is indoor salad greens.
Oh yeah, that kind of nano dome thing with the grow light. So yeah, a lot of people buying the grow lights. It's not just for pot growers anymore, you know. And so a lot more people are buying the grow light and they want to grow their own salad greens because you need that supplemental light in our winters, which are cold and dark.
For sure. And I'm getting actually a lot of people asking me about those things.
Excellent. So other things you can see, I think probably a good time to start if you want to do your broccoli, your cauliflower, your squash, your melons, your big melons, watermelons, things like that.
Yes.
Probably a good time to get those seeds in now.
And also those the really cool, interesting like petunias that are coming out right now. They're some amazing cultivars.
Mm-hmm.
So those things can totally be started now because they're a bit slow to get going.
One thing about seeds, and I'll tell people this, a lot of people come in and there's organic seeds, there's heirloom seeds, there's open pollinated seeds, there's all these different types of seeds. Here's the 2 second on seeds. Okay, heirloom seeds are kind of the original varieties. So they're the varieties your grandmother grew before, you know, they started hybridizing like crazy. And they're varieties that you can collect the seeds from and grow again, and they'll grow true. True just meaning that they'll grow into the same plant to give you the same kind of fruit reliably. Heirloom seeds are not necessarily organic seeds.
What do you mean?
Well, heirloom seeds, organic seeds have to be grown organically. The parent plants have to be grown organically with all the chemicals.
Oh.
Heirloom seeds, not necessarily so. So
okay,
a lot of people
okay.
confuse the two.
Right.
Heirloom varieties, a word of, you know, not warning, but a heads up about heirloom varieties is sometimes we hybridize plants for a reason. So sometimes the act of hybridizing typically is the act of miniaturizing a plant, shortening the yield time, and getting you more fruit. So heirloom's awesome, you know, but people come in and get an heirloom tomato and they might find that on Labor Day they have this giant unwieldy vine of tomatoes and 5 green tomatoes on it because they just take a long time.
That's exactly what happened to me when I first started gardening is I had those. And yeah, I had a ginormous plant and I had 3 good-sized Christmas balls on it. After an entire summer of growing, I had 3 tomatoes.
Yeah, where are they? You're out there with a hairdryer trying to get it to ripen.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, and plus some of the newer varieties are also, a disease resistance is built into them as well.
And that's really important, especially for tomatoes, for things like potatoes. You know, for your potato scab, because as soon as you can dig your soil, you can start to get those buds in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, best variety for resistance potato scab is the russet varieties.
Oh, yeah.
So your russet Burbanks, things like that, you know, go for those if you want to, one, avoid potato scab. And if you want French fries to taste like McDonald's.
Oh, really?
That's what they use.
Oh, neat. No, we usually go after the really expensive. Like, if you go into the garden markets, getting those little French fingerlings and the purple potatoes, they charge like an astronomical amount for a little bag. So those ones we actually grow. And then the big, the russets, those ones you can actually get in bulk.
That's a really good point, because if you want to save a lot of money in the garden, don't grow lettuce, grow mizuna, or grow mustard greens, or grow types of vegetables that are really hard to find, because those are the ones that are really expensive. You can only get them certain times a year. And especially if you like ethnic cooking, if you like world cuisine and you like growing, if you like authentic Thai spices, or if you want to grow, you know, Persian spices or Chinese, you know, certain Chinese snow pea or Asian eggplant, definitely grow that yourself, because they'll be just as easy to grow as the regular snow peas and eggplant. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you get it from a store, you have to go to a specialty store, you have to go to TNT or whatever, and they will charge you.
Oh, like things like bok choy, soo choy. Yep. I love those things.
So seeding, so, you know, get those seeds in, and of course your peas and your sweet peas, things like that, you can start, you know, you can start getting those seeds in as soon as you feel lucky.
Yeah.
It's like a Clint Eastwood movie. Do you feel lucky? Okay. Let's talk, you know, talking about getting seeds in the garden, let's talk about waking up that garden, because it's probably about time that, you know, we start getting in there and the garden starts stretching its legs a little bit and waking up.
Well, one of the main things is that there's been a huge upswing in planting of the Carl Forrester grasses, all of the different ornamental grasses that are used for winter interest. But what a lot of people do is they leave them way too late, way up until late April even. And what happens then is all the new growth starts growing inside the old dead growth. And then it takes forever to tweeze out the dead stuff.
Yeah.
So it's really important that if you can get there like in the first week in April and start cutting down all of your grasses. So then that way the grasses start growing through, just growing nice and clean and not getting caught up in last year's dead growth.
And about that winter, that winter appeal, those grasses are so cool in the winter because they stand out against the snow. In the winter, our yards just become just kind of white blanket. You know, we get snow blind looking out the window. And so they really break it up, and there's something for the birds to come and use for their nesting.
Mm-hmm. But also what's really nice is just the movement. Like for me, the whole, what's cool about the prairies is movement. So all of our grasses are always moving. Our trees, like poplars, you've got the noise that there's sound and movement. And so having the grasses in the wintertime, and especially if you use lighting systems, then you can shine the light along your fence line, and then you can get that beautiful sense of movement even in the dark.
I've noticed a real shift, especially in, you know, even in architecture, towards kind of embracing the prairie, embracing those horizontal prairie lines, grasses in the garden design.
Oh yeah,
things like that. Big blocks of that Carl Forrester grass is wonderful stuff.
Well, what I've always said is that the prairies, we can grow grass.
Oh, can we?
That's
ever?
The whole point of the prairies. Like we can grow amazing grass. So rather than trying to fight it out growing a rhododendron or wrapping your cedars, grow grass.
Yeah, and then you barely have to water the stuff. You don't have to do any winter care. It just does what it does.
Does what it does.
Yeah, and it's gorgeous.
However, you do have to take care of it first thing in the spring.
You do have to take care of first thing in the spring. So clear off that dead stuff, kind of go into the garden. And also, if you have kind of old flower stalks from peonies and old Irish stuff, clear some of that out as well.
Yeah, that can all be cut up and just turned over into the soil. So used as a just kind of a raw compost almost.
Perfect. There you go. A little more nitrogen in there.
Yeah.
Also, you can also a good idea to, in your vegetable bed, if you're planting those seeds, you're growing those extra vegetables and those extra groceries, you know, get some sea soil in there, get some manure in there, and just kind of get some extra good stuff and fluff it up.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Something that's really important as a gardener is that we always think about growing the plant material, but as a good gardener is also about growing soil and really aerating the soil, putting organic matter in the soil, and also really paying attention to the bacteria, to the life in the soil. So you want bugs and you want worms and you want lots of just tons of bacterial activity in there. And then if you have a really good healthy soil, then they release nutrients to your vegetables and then you have healthy vegetables.
I love that, growing the soil. I think that's great. We should put that on a t-shirt at the greenhouse, because I actually just wrote an article, it'll come out, you know, in a month or two, about they isolated a bacteria in soil, micro something or another. Yeah, a bacteria, when you get it on your hands, it ingests topically through your skin, and when you walk through the soil or walk through the forest, you breathe it in, and it actually stimulates serotonin-releasing neurons in your brain. It does the exact same thing Prozac does. Wow. And so all the people who say gardening makes them happy, this is scientific evidence that this is physiologically true, that gardening does actually make you happy, releases serotonin in your brain.
They're getting high on bacteria?
Okay. Oh, you had to make it weird. Also, they also took a little further. So when I was researching, I went a little further down this rabbit hole. And I found a study from University of Colorado or something. And it looked at mice, and it looked at two groups of mice. Some mice were fed this live samples of this soil-borne bacteria.
Okay.
Some mice were fed, innate samples. The ones who were fed live samples negotiated complex mazes and tasks twice as fast.
Wow.
As the ones who weren't. The effect wore off after 2-3 weeks. But, you know, it's like when I see my son in the garden pulling carrots and things like that and getting in the soil, I just know instinctually that it's good for him. Mm-hmm. I just know it is. Now there's evidence. It's actually helping him learn. It's actually calming him down. It's creating, it's helping him focus and learn better. So when you talk about things like school gardens, like Salisbury sponsors school gardens and, you know, 17 local schools now. When you talk about the importance of that, when kid goes out in gardens in the dirt, gets his hands dirty, when he comes back in the classroom, he's actually learning and retaining his math better.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool stuff. Big tangent. Pansies, talk about getting in the garden.
Oh, yes. One thing for many of my clients, often in Salisbury Lands, we do the landscaping, but your plants are really small going into the next spring.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's really nice is just to go into the greenhouses, and they'll have like 4-inch pansies, or they'll also often have little 6-packs. And then what you can do is you can just add those inside the garden. And pansies are incredibly cold resistant. So
-7 or something.
So right away in April, you've got flowers.
You've got plants
in the garden.
And you have that color. And pansies are one of my favorite flowers because they're just so cheerful. If you have a big yellow pansy with a face in your garden, you cannot be stressed out when you're looking at it. You just can't be. And so it's a wonderful little flower, and it'll bloom all through spring. In the summer, in the heat wave, cut it back.
Yes.
And give it a break.
Yeah.
And then,
long and gangly.
It gets long, gangly, and ugly. And then let the heat lovers, let the petunias and the calibrachoa, let them fill in for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll come back in the fall, and that sucker will keep blooming right through Halloween.
Yep. And with the pansy, the little Johnny Jump-Ups, the violas, those can get away on you. Like, if you plant those, sometimes you can have lots of them.
And that's fine with me. They're all over my garden.
Well, they're easy to weed out if you don't like them. But I do like the pansies, and then sometimes you will get more varieties later. Because you'll get the F1s, what is an F1?
The hybrids. F1 is a high-end hybrid.
Children, the daughters and sons of the hybrid. Yeah. And they'll be a little different. So they're kind of neat.
You know, violets were Napoleon's favorite flower.
No.
They used to call him Corporal Violet, and he actually used to pin a violet to his chest.
Oh, neat.
Just before he rampaged through Europe.
Killing everyone.
Yes, exactly. April's a good time to prune as well. In fact, probably the best time to prune.
Absolutely.
And when you prune, now, you can go out in the garden, you can see everything you need to prune, and you can strategize, and you can see exactly where the black knot is, and we know what black knot is.
Right.
So,
just for the listeners, though, on your Schubert choke cherries, Maydays, you can get this huge like 3-inch black sausage, and it just kind of hangs off the tree.
It's like burnt sausages clinging to your
branch. Yeah. Yeah. And so the great thing about right now is that you can see where they are, and you have to cut about 6 inches to 8 inches below and remove the black knot completely.
Exactly. And don't put it in compost, put it in garbage. And the reason you have to cut a distance away is that the fungus actually starts inside the branch. By the time you see the black sausages, that's about the third year of its cycle. It actually starts inside the branch and breaks out of the branch like aliens. And, you know, and then kind of clings to the tree. And cutting it off is not optional, folks. You need to cut it off because it will kill your tree. It will move to any other Schubert, Mayday, anything in the cherry family, apple, prunus. Any apples, prunus, yeah, anything like that. It will kill all that stuff. It's really bad news. So you basically have to prune it all out and see what's left. Make sure to sanitize your instruments after. And it's, you know, it's going to spread a long way in cool, wet springs. Around the time when the apple trees bloom is when it goes to spore.
Right.
And that's when it turns all white. Those are the spores. Nasty business. You got to get it before then.
Unfortunately, there is a really important rule about pruning, which is never remove more than 1/3 of the plant. So with that doesn't include dead stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you can always, generally with pruning, it's remove disease, dead, and damaged.
Yes.
So remove all of the dead stuff, and then after that, then you follow the 1/3 rule.
Yeah.
So if your tree is incredibly diseased, you still remove all of the worst of it. What I do is I remove all of the worst of it, and then I still stop at the third, and then I pick up again in the fall. So in late October, then I'll go and I'll remove all the rest of it, and then that way it's
give it a bit of a break,
a little break, so that the plant can recuperate a little bit.
That 1/3 rule so important. Because, you know, a plant, I mean, think of the leaves of a plant like the plant's stomach. That's how the plant pulls in nutrients from, because, I mean, plants eat light. They're pretty incredible. And that's how plant pulls the nutrients in. You take off half its leaves. Well, try taking out half your stomach and see how you feel. So so it's very important to stick to that 1/3 rule. But April is the time to prune really almost any deciduous plant except... Well, except your early bloomers.
Yeah.
You can, but you lose them.
Yes.
I have a big hedge of old homesteader lilacs in my place.
Mm.
And they would, if I didn't prune them every couple of years, they would break into my house and evict me from the property. They are very aggressive. And, you know, so I prune them whenever I want, you know. But the elm now is illegal to prune
in Edmonton
area. So you cannot prune elm between April 1st and Halloween. Never, never, never. And if you think that's strict... Keep in mind that Edmonton has the largest surviving elm forest in North America. The elm bark beetle has wiped out the most, good chunk of the world's elms. Follow the rules, folks. Also, birch.
And maple.
Yeah.
The one thing with maples is that we are finally getting some really good varieties coming to Edmonton where we can actually have red leafed beautiful fall colors.
I adore maples in the fall.
And so the great thing is that now people are really using them, and they're surviving very nicely in through the winter. But you can't prune them.
No.
And what's really important is that you do have to pinch them. So June, as soon as June comes, then you can get in there. And it's really important to just pinch the ends. And what that does is it bushes them out.
Yep.
And then so you get a nice fuller tree, and then of course you get more leaves.
Like you pinch a petunia or something like that to bush
out. Yeah, that same thing. And then you just get a fuller looking plant.
Nice.
But people start too early in May, and then what happens is it starts raining sap down.
Yes.
And then you get all of that sugary sap, and then that invites the aphids.
And the wasps. And the wasps. And the ants. Yeah.
And then the aphids poo all over the place, and then you get the black, sooty... bacteria.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yes.
Lovely.
And then so that covers the sidewalks. So it's a whole little ecosystem.
Oh, you're just a barrel of sunshine this morning.
All due to pruning times.
Oh, due to wasp poop. I'll keep that in mind. So now what about, no, okay, so here I am, the snow's melted, I look out my lawn, covered in mouse damage.
Yes.
The mice goes in. My dad used to say two mice go under the snow in the fall and about 20 come out. So, you know, so do they. and probably not going to be a very horrible mouse year because of the low snow cover. They didn't have a whole lot to hide. Mind you, didn't get very cold to wipe them out. But what do you do about that mouse damage?
What I do is make sure you wear a mask. Because there is the potential for a hantavirus infection. So you always wear a mask. Basically, what we do is we just rake up all of the dead debris. And if the damage is severe, what I do is I add a little bit of high middle number fertilizer.
Okay.
Because there's going to be root damage.
Get the roots going.
And so what that does is that it just gives the roots that little extra push to grow.
Instead of the high first number, the nitrogen, which is typical in the spring.
Yes.
Okay.
Because, but that, the high first number is for grass, so to grow nice green leaves. But with mouse damage, there's root damage.
They go
for
the roots.
That's where that high middle number. You only do one treatment, though. Only one treatment. Otherwise, you'll end up with seeding on your grass.
Incidentally, folks, hantavirus. So, you know, you see a mouse around your house, you see a mouse running outside or, you know, even worse in your basement or something like that. There's two types of mouse. There are two types of mice around. Really significant types. There's a little house mouse, and they're a little brown mouse. You know, smaller than both sides of a ping pong ball. And if they're really
cute and adorable,
they are actually quite cute. if they're in your house, they're not so cute. But you know, and if they're in your basement for a while, they're probably really fat. But they don't. They do not carry hantavirus. The mice, and they typically frequent urban areas and built-up areas. The mouse that carries hantavirus are the deer mice, and they're the ones who look like Mickey. Okay, they're the bigger mice. They're a little more triangular shape. They have a white belly and, you know, big round ears, and they're more in rural areas. They are carriers of hantavirus, so if you see them around, unfortunately, they're a lot more rare than the brown house mouse. If you see them around, got to get rid of them, folks. And your lawn now, you know, you don't fertilize your lawn. A lot of people think, oh, snow's gone, time to fertilize.
No. It's wasted.
Yeah.
It's completely wasted. Well, because
it could do damage.
Yeah. No, so definitely I wait until, my general rule with fertilizing is May 15, June 15, July 15.
Okay.
So basically just as the grass is starting to wake up, the roots are getting energized and you're starting to get some growth in the grass.
Do you think that could be a little earlier this year with the weather?
Oh yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. This year I would say, because usually the beginning of May is usually when the Maydays leaf out.
Okay.
But I think the beginning of May will actually be like a week, maybe even a little bit more early. I think the Maydays this year are going to probably come out in the fourth week in May, or in April, sorry. And so what that means is that the whole spring season will move earlier. So things that you used to plant much later in May, you can actually probably do a little bit earlier this year.
Of course, my Alberta mind is going thinking, and then there'll be a big snowstorm to kick our butts.
We always get three.
We always get three. Lovely. So not till it's actually growing, and you know, the dethatch, that's important, but you know, don't dethatch right away, because a lot of times you get the new sprouts just poking up the soil, and if you dethatch right away and start giving it with a rake, I know you're eager, folks. Start pruning instead. And if you dethatch right away, you can rip off all that new growth and really, really harm the lawn.
Well, you wreck the crowns. So that's what, and then that sets back your grass a bit.
Yeah.
It'll still come back, but you can't keep doing that. Grass is really resilient, again, because we're in Alberta, we can grow grass.
A word about thatch is that, you know, there's two different views about thatch. There's, you know, getting in there with a rake and just cleansing the thatch, like purging it all out right down to soil. And that's typically the yards you see the lawn is cut to about a quarter inch high.
Yeah.
You know, first time the sun comes out, you get these big brown spots everywhere because it burns it. My philosophy about thatch is to leave a little thatch, leave a half inch of thatch in the lawn, because not only does that, you know, that actually shades the soil so that weed seeds down there have a tougher time growing. And then leave your lawn a little longer. Leave your lawn, you know, a little longer, and so that, you know, longer lawn is going to be more resilient to, you know, to changes in temperature and droughts. And it's also, again, it's going to shield that the ground, keep those weeds from germinating.
Sure. No, totally. And actually, that half inch of thatch is actually a rule. So in order to determine if you have a half inch of thatch, often what you do is you just dig a little hole, a little plug. And then so you pull that plug out and you can actually look at the thatch and see if you have a half inch. So for people that get new landscaping, right away, first thing in the spring, they get the little flyers on their door saying, oh, you got to dethatch and you got to aerate and everything. It's like, for a new yard, no. You're not going to dethatch probably for at least 3 years by the time your new yard has grown and you've got enough of that half inch of thatch.
Yeah, exactly. So right about now, you're all starting to get your doors knocked by, you know, the teenagers in the hoodie and the pickup truck asking to dethatch the lawn. You know, if you're in a new home, again, don't have half inch, then just keep walking.
Yeah.
Right on.
Save your money.
Well, I think that's about it for Garden in April. Of course, there's a lot more to talk about.
Oh, but yeah. There's tons more to talk about.
There's tons more. We're at time here, dude.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for joining the Eager Gardeners. I'm Rob Sproul from Salisbury Greenhouse.
And I'm Kevin Napora from Salisbury Landscaping.
And keep your hands dirty. We'll see you in May.
Thanks for being eager to get into that garden. Rob and Kevin are around every month on SalisburyGreenhouse.com or SalisburyLandscaping.ca. Till next time, keep your fingernails dirty and your thumbs green.